President has decided to retire two older Poseidon submarines as the 8th Trident submarine begins its sea trials. This means the U.S. will stay in technical observance of SALT for some months. This gives the Soviet Union even more time to correct their erosion of SALT.
How dare he do such a thing to me? That's what went through my mind, and I'm not going to let him get away with it.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News. There is a war raging in this country. It is a war against the number one killer of teenagers, drinking and driving. In fact, in less than an hour, another teenager will be added to the list. But while the war rages on, the battle against drinking and driving is being won. Teenagers from coast to coast are banding together to eliminate their number one killer. It's a new generation of students who believe they have to look out for their friends, who believe if the problem of drinking and driving is their problem, then they can solve it. They're daring to dream they have the power to eliminate drunk driving among teenagers. This public service announcement has been brought to you by SAD, Students Against Driving Drunk. For more information on how you can join the fight against drinking and driving, write to SAD, Post Office Box 800, Marlboro, Massachusetts, 01752. We're winning the war, but we still need your help.
Last March, a man using the name Gary called several news agencies to warn them that unless a drug company took some action, he'd continue tampering with some of its products.
If not by 9 o'clock our time, Eastern time, it's not announced that it's their cyanide already been sold out there, and we want SmithKline to find another way to package their products, totally take them off the shelves and repackage them, then they're going to have a lot more problems with a lot more people.
Gary, as it turns out, is really a 24-year-old Temple City, California man named Edward Marks. And according to the FBI's Fred Reagan,
he is being charged with tampering of consumer products, specifically contact cold capsules, Dietac capsules, and Teldrin capsules, all manufactured by the Smith, Klein, and Beckman company in Orlando, Florida.
Marks is the first person actually charged with tampering. The FBI says he was identified through a fingerprint lifted from a capsule package. The agency was able to cross-check it because Marks had a previous criminal record. As for why he tampered with the products,
Marks had received stockbroker training, and during the period of March 17 through 19, 1986, he participated in some stock exchange activity regarding the purchase of what are called puts options on the stock of Smith, Klein, and Beckman. Now, puts are options which might result in substantial profit in the event purchased stocks were to drop in price substantially and unexpectedly.
But Marks lost out on that when Smith, Klein stock went up instead. No one was hurt as a result of that tampering incident. Smith Klein recently announced that it's bringing back its Contact and Teldrin products in more tamper-proof packages. The incident came in the same week that authorities in Austin, Texas announced that a University of Texas student had died after taking an Anacin 3 capsule filled with cyanide. The product was ordered yanked off local shelves. The FDA was called in to check all Anacin 3 capsules and
the tests were uniformly negative, no tampering, no poison.
The FDA's Bill Griggs said they would check every aspect of the case, but
so far we have no evidence that this is anything other than an isolated incident. We're taking these various steps just to be on the safe side.
Still to be determined whether the victim, Kenneth Ferries, was murdered or whether he committed suicide. Meantime, several drugstore chains pulled Anacin 3 off their shelves nationwide as a precaution. Last Sunday was a day for holding hands. Hands Across America was Ken Cragen's brainchild to bring attention to the plight of America's hungry and homeless. And the promoter was overjoyed with how the project came off.
Somewhere between 6 and 7 million people actually participated. There were events going on in every state.
The idea was to form a human chain across a 4,150-mile path through 16 states and Washington, D.C., with each participant contributing $10. The event attracted the rich, the famous, and just plain folks from all over.
114, you're 115, you're 116.
This group was lining up in Aurora, Ohio, as people all across the country got set to join hands and keep them joined for 15 minutes. In some places, there were gaps in the line, but they managed to fill them in novel ways. A farmer lined up some prize bulls in one case, and at one spot in Maryland, it became boats across America.
There was a break in the chain across the Susquehanna River Bridge. It was about 2,500 to 3,000 people they were lacking, and at $10 a shot, that's close to $30,000. We've got boaters and we've got scuba divers, and we decided we're not going to break the chain.
There were places where the chain just didn't go, such as Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and that got a fifth grader named Travis Beard thinking.
They weren't touching the Midwest states, or breadbasket of the nation, so that kind of got me a little mad, so I started to get something going here in Cedar Rapids.
And get something going he did. When he was done, Travis had convinced some 1,500 people in Cedar Rapids to form what he called a line of love. It raised $2,000 for the community's food bank. Meanwhile, the main chain linked up, and ABC's John Bascom watched one group of participants.
President Reagan now joining his wife, Nancy Reagan, his daughter, Maureen, and her husband in singing America the Beautiful. Just outside the north door, the front door of the White House, the president holding in his left hand the hand of a boy about 12 years old, and in his right hand, the hand of a boy about 6 years old.
There were some skeptics among the enthusiasts. Clara Dwyer knows only too well how helpless the situation can be sometimes. She runs a shelter for the homeless in Philadelphia.
Seems a lot of it's like a social event. It's the thing to do today, to be a part of Hands Across America. But I hope people do think beyond that and, you know, take into consideration that there's a lot of hunger and homelessness going on right here in America.
But for one homeless person in Philadelphia, the day meant something.
All I got to say is one thing. Bless all of you.
The goal of Hands Across America was $50 million. It'll be a few weeks before it's known if it was reached. But as one participant in Long Beach, California, Boyd Kaufman put it.
Not many events like this, and I'd like to see a whole lot more of them.
As it turned out, another event to fight hunger was held the same day as Hands Across America. It was kicked off at the United Nations by a runner from the Sudan who had brought a torch ignited in his native country. ABC's John Degnan was on hand.
The torch is now lit. Omar Kalika standing in front of it outside the UN building with his arms raised high. Down below him, some 3,000 runners have taken off on their 3.1-mile race against time. And around the world at the same moment, in 75 countries, some 20 million people are joining in this race. SportAid's Race Against Time for African Famine Relief. John Degnan, ABC News, New York.
Bob Geldof, who had organized the Live Aid concerts last year, set up this past week's SportAid.
I'm glad because it's worked. I mean, now it's over, it's worked. And I really don't think there can be a politician going to the UN tomorrow who doesn't know what people feel.
The UN delegates were meeting to discuss Africa's economic crisis, a crisis that Secretary of State George Shultz said could not be solved merely by throwing money at it.
No amount of foreign assistance and no measure of good intentions can alleviate the hardship caused by a government bent on misguided policies.
One of those policies is apparently taking place in Ethiopia, where thousands of people died during the recent drought. The Marxist government there has been resettling many of its people. And ABC's Karen Byrne says the results have been disastrous.
People who have witnessed this program being implemented say that it resembles forced labor camps. There's no food, there's no water when people arrive. They live on top of one another, and in fact, when they die, the bodies just pile up until the stench becomes overwhelming. There's absolutely nothing hygienic in these programs, and consequently, people are dying of malaria, cholera, and a variety of other diseases.
Correspondent Byrne says those who don't die from the unsanitary conditions are attacked and killed by a local rebel group, which is said to be backed by the Ethiopian and the Soviet governments. Stung by accusations that it has been involved in terrorist acts in Europe, the government of Syria this past week has sent several messages to Washington denying the accusations, and Syria has asked for talks to resolve what it calls differences and misunderstandings on the issue. Syria seemed to get some support from Italy in that regard. Italy, which just a week ago was said to be issuing warrants for some 20 Syrians it believed were implicated in last December's attack at the Rome airport, decided this week not to take action against any Syrian officials. And as we heard from Kathleen Barnes, attention seems to have been turned to Libya.
What one Italian diplomat calls the war of expulsions has heated up considerably in the past 24 hours. Italy has expelled 12 more Libyans, including the director of the Libyan investment company, which controls the controversial 15% of the stock in Fiat Motor Company. Other prominent businessmen are among those Italian police say are involved in strange activities, such as spying for the Libyan government. Diplomatic sources say the confrontation has come to a critical point, and it may not be possible to maintain diplomatic relations between the two traditionally friendly countries. Kathleen Barnes, ABC News, Rome.
President Reagan made a decision this week to keep the United States in step with the provisions of the unratified 1979 SALT agreement with the Soviets.
The president has decided to retire two older Poseidon submarines as the eighth Trident submarine begins its sea trials. This means the U.S. will stay in technical observance of SALT for some months. This gives the Soviet Union even more time to correct their erosion of SALT. If they do so, the president will take this into account.
The announcement by Larry Speaks at the White House was greeted with mixed feelings on Capitol Hill, where Democratic Senator Albert Gore of Tennessee said,
"The good news is that we are not going to undercut the treaty. It is eminently in our best interest. The bad news is that the president has inched the country a step closer to breaking out of SALT II late this year when the next decision comes around."
America's NATO allies don't care too much for the implications either. Here's correspondent Barry Dunsmore.
The External Affairs Minister of Canada summed it up for the allies when he said this was a profoundly disturbing development. The fact of the matter is that most, in fact, all of the allies believe that, flawed it may be, but SALT II is the only game in town. It's the only major arms control treaty that's still being adhered to, and it does represent a cap, some limits on the number of strategic weapons. If that's removed, there's the fear that there will just be an explosion and a spiraling of the arms race.
As weapons have been developed, nuclear waste has been generated, and it has to be put somewhere. The administration this past week narrowed to three the prospective sites for storage of that waste.
One in Yucca Mountain, Nevada, the second in Deaf Smith, Texas, and the third in Hanford, Washington.
In announcing the locations, Energy Secretary John Harrington said that a decision on a second dump could be put off a bit longer.
The first repository, which the law permits to hold up to 70,000 metric tons of waste, will be adequate in the foreseeable future. Based on our review of this information, it's the department's opinion that the nation need not consider a second repository until at least the mid-1990s.
6 years' worth of tests have to be made before a final pick is made, and already opposition is mounting in the three potential dumping areas. George Drain heads the effort near the Texas site.
People are going to associate nuclear waste with Amarillo. They're going to associate it with the panhandle. They're going to associate it with the crops that are grown here.
A recommendation on which site is the most acceptable to the government won't be made until 1994. The casualties in the Chernobyl disaster keep mounting. One of the Soviet news agencies said this week that as many as 1,000 people were injured, and that some of them may have been residents of the zone evacuated around the plant. Dr. Robert Gale, the American bone marrow specialist who's been helping to treat some of the victims, says the number of dead has now climbed to 23, and he expects more to die. Dr. Gale will be going to the Chernobyl area this coming week.
We want to begin to make some assessment of the potential risks to a larger population on a long-term basis, and to establish collaborative binational agreements for the follow-up of perhaps 50 or 100,000 individuals.
And following the lead of events such as Hands Across America, several Soviet rock bands held a concert this week for the benefit of the Chernobyl victims. Among those taking part was the organizer of the concert, Artem Troitsky.
We want to help, and we want to be active, and we want to show the people here, the people outside, well, in the West, and to show ourselves, too, that we can do some important things.
The concert raised more than $100,000, with more expected from future recording sales. In what the State Department called a significant step, the Kremlin this week made an offer to resolve the cases of some divided families.
The Soviet government informed us of the names of 36 divided family cases from the U.S. government representation list who will be allowed to join family members in the United States. These cases involve 117 Soviet individuals.
State Department spokesman Charles Redmond said that if the latest offer is carried out, it would mark the largest single resolution of such cases since the U.S. began pushing for family reunification in the mid-1950s. The offer is not seen, however, as marking any change in the overall Soviet policy on immigration, such as that which governs Jews trying to leave for Israel. Along with all the other news of the week, last Monday was a time for reflection. In large cities and small towns, people stopped for a while, as they have each year, in the years following the Civil War, to remember the 1,200,000 men and women who have died in the service of their country. On this Memorial Day, President Reagan was at Arlington to pay his respects.
We owe them a promise to look at the world with a steady gaze and perhaps a resigned toughness, knowing that we have adversaries in the world and challenges, and the only way to meet them and maintain the peace is by staying strong.
There was a special ceremony at the Vietnam Memorial.
Michael Schmidt, Wayne Moneymaker, Charles K. Moran, Jr.
The names of 110 servicemen were read as they were added to those already inscribed on the black granite wall. The names had been omitted when the memorial was dedicated 4 years ago. Leo Broadhead was pleased to see his son's name included.
I'm just very, very proud now that we've got his name on there. Not only for me, but for his widow who is here, two grandkids who is here. They can come up here and see their daddy's name on this thing.
One Vietnam vet in Mary Esther, Florida, is sending the Purple Heart he was awarded to the White House. Harold Bradshaw says it's to protest the awarding of Purple Hearts to such people as Leon Klinghoffer, who was killed by terrorists on the Achille Lauro last October, and to 36 soldiers injured in the Berlin disco bombing in April. Purple Hearts, Bradshaw says, should be given only to those people wounded in combat.
I definitely think it's wrong for any individual in this administration to be running around, passing around like popcorn. I.e., we have certain medals that is designed to be passed out to civilians for heroism and etc. However, they're not entitled to Purple Hearts.
Bradshaw says he respects the president and the armed forces, but he thinks the misuse of medals should be stopped. The Presidential Commission's report on the Challenger disaster, due sometime in early June, and James Walker has a preview of what will be in it.
ABC News has learned that the commission report will conclude, as expected, that the failure of the O-ring seals in the solid rocket booster was the cause of the Challenger disaster. And a source close to the investigation told ABC News the panel will also pinpoint other problems with the shuttle system and recommend establishment of review committees independent of NASA to oversee design changes. But ABC News has been told that commission members have concluded the real culprit was bad management at the space agency. Schedule pressure, said one source, was what really caused the accident. NASA was doing too much with too little budget and too little time. James Walker, ABC News, New York.
Major indictments were handed up in Boston this week against eight people accused of trying to overthrow the U.S. government.
We're talking about an organization that for over 9 years was involved in 19 bombings, 10 bank robberies, 2 attempted murders, and 1 murder.
FBI agent James Greenleaf says the members of the Sam Melville, Jonathan Jackson unit wanted to overthrow the government because of its various foreign policies and because of racial injustice in this country. The bank robberies the group carried out were allegedly to finance its other operations. In Los Angeles, 3 former defendants in the McMartin preschool child molestation case filed wrongful prosecution suits this past week. One of the people asking for $10 million in damages is Peggy Ann Buckey.
It's continuing to be a witch hunt. There's 2 people standing trial now. My brother is in jail on a no bail. And we think the people that have caused this should be held responsible for their actions.
Buckey, her grandmother, and another employee of the school were among 5 defendants dismissed from the case because of insufficient evidence. All had been accused of molesting children at the preschool. The country's worst bus crash in more than 5 years happened in Walker, California this week when a tour bus carrying senior citizens plunged off a mountain road and dropped 15 feet into the Walker River. Sergeant Daniel Trittin was among some Marines at a nearby training facility who was called to help the victims.
The top of the bus was pretty well smashed down to bottom window level. The back end
was ripped open, banged up a lot. The front had the window smashed out.
18 people were killed in the crash. Another 24 were injured. A witness said the bus driver was speeding. At the Indianapolis Speedway, where speed is the name of the game, Bobby Rahal won the Indy 500 with an average speed of 170 miles an hour. The race was put off a week because of heavy rain. The Montreal Canadiens beat the Calgary Flames 4-1 to capture an unprecedented 23rd National Hockey League championship. Goaltender Patrick Roy, a rookie, was the series' most valuable player. In Washington, John Pennington became the most valuable speller.
Odontalgia. O-D-O-N-T-A-L-G-I-A.
And with that, 14-year-old John, who's from Shermantown, Pennsylvania, won this year's National Spelling Bee and the trophy and $1,000 prize that go with it. Asked after the last round to spell how he felt, John quipped,
G-I-R-E-D.
And I'll have a story about one feisty lady when World News This Week continues in a moment.
You might call me a world traveler. And indeed, I've explored new worlds where no man has gone before. I've voyaged far into the future, and I've seen a world you can only imagine. It is a world without forests, barren and scorched, bereft of life. A world devoured by flames, flames from a senseless match or a thoughtless campfire. It is a world without hope, and I can only hope that you will be smart enough to prevent this vast wasteland. Because the forests belong in your future. They belong to your children, and they belong on this earth. So be smart and careful, aware and alert. That's really the only logical solution. And I should know. I'm Leonard Nimoy, and only you can prevent forest fires.
A public service of the Forest Service, USDA, your state foresters, and the Ad Council.
The police advise that you not try to fight back if you're being robbed, the theory being that material things can be replaced, lives cannot. But when Vera Tucker, an 86-year-old Englishwoman, was accosted by a purse snatcher in New York City this week, her dander really got up.
How dare he do such a thing to me? That's what went through my mind, and I'm not going to let him get away with it if I can help it. So I ran after him.
Just about then, a man named Greg Cully came by.
I saw a man driving down the street on a bicycle with a purse on his handlebars and a woman behind him batting him with her umbrella, shrieking, "Stop, you'll not get away." I assumed he had snatched the purse, so I jumped in front of him and grabbed him. He pushed the purse into my hand, said, it's over." I said, "Like hell it is." Wrestled him down to the ground and held him until the police came.
And it's a good thing they did, because Vera Tucker wasn't through.
I wanted to go and whack him some more when he was down, but they pushed me away. They wouldn't let me do that.
Mrs. Tucker used to play golf and tennis when she was young. Now at 86, she gets her exercise by walking around her neighborhood. She always carries that umbrella. And those are the people and stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Lungen. Engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and Tom Kennedy. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.